Hello, hello. Welcome to the Gardening Network Vine. You're joining your hosts today, Siobhan Shaw from Pretty and High Canada, and Lisa Roberts from Pretty but Very Hot and Dry Central Texas. And welcome, everyone. And we have Toni Hewitt with us today, and she is from the Carolinas, and she's our Farminated gal. And she's a fan of the show, and she Twitters us, and we thought it'd be a great idea to ask a plant-loving fan, as Toni is, why she plants and why she homesteads and what exactly is farmination. So today's show is sponsored by, of course, Little Crop of Circles, and where you can grow more in small spaces, littlecropcircles.com. Hello, everyone.
Hello, hello, and
hey.
Toni isn't with us today. It's actually Jody Hewitt.
Oh, did I say Toni? What is wrong with me?
You said it twice. And I am clapping. I have to clap because I did that with a celebrity from a soap opera once, and I called her Patricia the whole time, and her name is Patrika Darbo. And
Jody.
That just happened.
So Jody, your nickname is now Toni.
Fair enough.
Instead of Farminated Girl. I'm sorry. Oh goodness.
It's perfectly okay.
Good. Well, hey, Jody, will you tell us what farmination means and how did you come up with that?
Well, I went online and there's this cool thing where you can put in a word and it will generate a bunch of made up words related to the word.
Yes.
No.
I was looking for something catchy for my blog name.
It is.
And Farminated made me fall out of my chair laughing. So there it was. It kind of reminded me of the Terminator. And, you know.
You're the Terminator of gardens.
You're terminated.
Pretty much.
I like
make,
it.
Is it make my day? What? I don't even know.
I can't take like credit it. Because I just got it off of a word generator, but I thought it was brilliant, and so I snatched it up for my blog title. And
so you're the Farminated gal, and your Twitter handle is @Farminated, and you're following the Gardening Network on Twitter and Little Crop Circles on Twitter, and that's how we found you, because when we were thinking about doing a show on homesteading and survivalists, which is the opposite end of the spectrum from, say, an urban gardener who's got a pot of tomatoes on their balcony in their apartment in New York City or something. We saw you and it was like, wow, we've got to have somebody who is decided to go that self-sufficient lifestyle route. And yep. There you are.
There I am.
So can you tell our audience what a homesteader is?
I don't think that it's like in the early part of our country where homesteading had a good farm definition. I think it's a lot more flexible these days, and it has to do more with the mindset of wanting to decrease your impact on the earth, increase your self-sufficiency, and be able to provide things for yourself that most people just take for granted, being able to go to the grocery store or to Walmart and pick up.
I agree. So it's not exactly living off the grid.
It can be. I mean, it's a word that I've seen on a lot of blogs. People are trying to sort out what exactly does homesteading mean today. And there's just such a wide variety of people who homestead that it can't just be defined as that person who has their property and is completely and entirely off-grid and self-sufficient. It just has to be bigger than that. There are people who live in apartments and grow food on their balconies, and maybe they mend their socks instead of going and buying a new pack of socks every month or so. And I would hate for those people to feel that they weren't true homesteaders just because they aren't in a position to have a ton of land and grow everything for themselves and live off the grid. That's not for everybody, but that doesn't mean you can't be a homesteader.
I agree. I'm glad you stated it so well. I think a lot of people who are really good with budgeting, that know how to, like you say, mend their socks, sew dresses, cut back, use natural materials to clean. They don't have to buy a bunch of cleaners. People who are resourceful, to me, are homesteaders as well. Would you agree with that?
Oh, gosh, 100%. I think resourcefulness and frugality are the two core defining points of a homesteader.
I do, too. When I was talking with you last week when I was in Florida, I asked you, why did you get into this? And you told me something so interesting that I think will be such an inspiration to our listeners. Could you share with everyone why you personally got into homesteading?
I would love to. It's why I like to talk about it. I have lupus, and every year that goes by since I've been diagnosed, my health has gone further and further downhill. And I've done a lot of reading from research institutes, medical journals, and all of this. And there is a definite correlation in lupus with regards to chemical exposures and environmental type exposures. And I started thinking really hard about that. And I was like, well, I live out in the country. I'm not near any major fields, mostly just pasture. So I just could not figure it out. And then I saw Farmageddon, and it led me into a few other documentaries. And it dawned on me while I was watching these documentaries, there's chemicals in my food. I'm putting horrible things into my body, and I had no idea. Because it's not written on the boxes. It's not written on the vegetables in the grocery store. It's not written on the packages of meat in the grocery store. Mm-hmm. And that is what made me decide, if I want to make sure that what I'm putting into my body is as absolutely pure and true as it can be, I'm going to have to make it or grow it myself. And that's
Are you feeling better?
Not really, but my garden has done really badly this year. So I, I've just started. So I haven't fully reaped the benefits yet.
Right.
But they will come.
Yes.
I feel slightly better because I've cut out all boxed and packaged crap
processed
from the grocery
food.
Store.
Right.
And I try to buy organic when I can. But organic still has pesticides in it. So what I get out of my garden, when I eat it, I know that it's pure and true and doing good to my body, not doing any harm. And there's comfort in that.
I agree. In your research, did you find that a lot of individuals with autoimmune systems are staying away from processed foods and going more into natural live foods to help their systems combat what their bodies are fighting naturally?
I have not seen it. I haven't seen that. I think you should see that. But I know my doctor rolls his eyes at me when I tell him that that's what I'm doing. He thinks it's crazy. You know, the government says the food is fine. It's fine. I feel differently. Everybody, that's the beauty of where we live. We're allowed to feel differently. Mm-hmm. I think in the future they'll discover a correlation between autoimmune disorders and pesticide levels in food.
And there are some studies out that I have read in a lot of journals that are finding that correlation now, and people are getting, like you, Jody, they're getting on more natural foods, and that's why they're growing their own. They're having their own little chickens in their backyard. Forget the rooster, makes too much noise. But they're having their own hens, and they're having their own eggs. They know what they're feeding their chickens. They're free range. They know they're eating off of bugs and things that are in their community, so to help their immune systems. Some are even keeping bees in boxes in their backyard to get the honey. And have you started doing things like this? Tell us what exactly you do where you're at.
Right now, I have a starter flock. I have 5 hens and a rooster. None of them are laying yet. My rooster crows once a day. It's awesome. And I have a couple of gardens. We just moved here a year ago, so I'm doing it slowly but surely. I'm doing it with an autoimmune disease. Sometimes what people can do in an hour, it might take a week to do, but it's worth it to stick to it and to keep pressing forward and know that those results are going to come.
So, Jody, how big a space do you have for your chickens in your gardens? Like, you know, do you have a typical size house and then you have like 5 acres or 100 acres, or what's it look like?
I live on 1 acre. Chickens have a fenced in area that is quite large for 6 chickens. It's an entire 100-foot roll of fence big. Mm-hmm. And that's where they're allowed to do their roaming and ranging, and I've used T-posts and farm fence, so I'm able to move that around a bit. Once they clear it out, I can replant it with some pasture seed and move their fenced-in area until I get more sprouts growing, and then move the fence back.
How did you learn what to do? What, like, first of all, where do you get chickens? People would probably be asking, you know, can everybody have chickens in their backyard? Or do you have to have like farm license or something?
People need to check their city bylaws first. Mm. I live out in the country, so it's not a big deal. I can have whatever I want as long as it's not commercial.
Okay.
But check your bylaws. There are a million places to get chickens. You can find them on Craigslist. You can find them on Facebook. There's hatcheries. I did a Google search, and I found a guy about an hour away from me who sells 5-week-old sexed chickens. And I was like, this is brilliant. I don't have to do a brooder and raise baby chicks. I can get them when they already have feathers and are ready for the hen house. This mm-hmm. is awesome. And so I've gotten all of my chickens from him.
Now, do you use your chickens just for laying eggs, or do you actually kill them and eat them?
Well, for right now, we really just feed them because they're not old enough to lay.
Oh, okay.
But the long-term plan is, this is our starter flock, and we will keep our starter flock for 2 years. They will lay eggs. They can hatch eggs out. We'll grow out babies, and the babies that we're going to eat their babies will grow out.
You got nothing. Nothing. The news is all about something else right now, and you just stepped right into it. Talking about stepping right into it, can you have cows and pigs and those kinds of sort of hooved animals?
I can where I live, but I wouldn't feel right having a cow on my space, because it could survive, but it wouldn't be a happy cow. Because an acre really isn't enough space for a really happy cow. So cows will not be happening. Hopefully next spring we're going to pick up a few wiener pigs and raise those up, and then I'm going to have a friend come help me slaughter.
So this is maybe hard for some people that are thinking, oh yeah, I want to be self-sufficient. I want to grow my own vegetables. I want to be a farminator. I want to homestead. I'm going to do this. And then they hear that, you know, one of their choices is, do they want to raise and slaughter pigs and chickens and ducks and geese and all those things that people eat?
That's a tough question, and I gotta say, slaughter day is not fun. It's not a good day. It's not a good day for anybody. The key is you give those animals such a fabulous life. You make their lives enriched and happy, and you keep them healthy, and they get one bad day, and that's slaughter day. And you're gonna feel bad. It's hard. It should be hard. If not, you probably need medication or a psychiatrist.
I need medication because I can't do it.
I grew up on a farm, and slaughter day was tough. And you know, watching my mom, she took the chicken, but I mean, she was a homesteader, you know, she really was. And she had the wherewithal to realize that if she wanted her family to have a self-sufficient lifestyle, which we did we made our own clothes and stuff, right? We didn't shear the sheep and take the wool. You know, we sheared the sheep, and I don't know where the wool went. Probably got sold, but I don't remember, you know, weaving looms or anything like that.
Looning.
I don't even know what to call it. So I don't remember. I do remember that sewing machine was going 24/7. Right. So, but I remember those days, and they were tough, and that's just a choice people have to make. Either if you're going to be self-sufficient, it may be one piece of that self-sufficiency, you know, lifestyle that you have to deal with, and you have to learn how to do, and make it as what's the word? You know, it's like in Avatar where they're like, "I see you," you know, that just understand that the animal is giving you life. So, you know,
I think that slaughter day should be difficult. The day that slaughter day becomes easy is the day I will stop eating meat.
Mm.
It should never be easy to take another life, whether it's human or an animal, even if it is that life's purpose. It's a form of respect.
Jody, do you have any children?
I have two fur babies.
No, I was just going to state that I know that farminating and homesteading is great to teach children responsibility about taking care of others, taking care of animals, going through the chores, and on slaughter day, being very grateful and thankful that they're giving their lives to sustain your life and a lot of families.
If there were children in the house, they would be involved in every aspect. And I think that slaughter day is an aspect that's important for the children to understand. Jamie Oliver has done many shows that show children today have no idea where their food comes from. They don't even know what it's supposed to look like. And that's sad to me. That's very sad to me. I think that it's important that children understand that chicken doesn't come in nugget form.
It's so true.
They don't correlate when they see a chicken that the feathers go off and there you go. And this is what happens.
Where do the eggs come from? that would probably put some kids off for the lifetime. So let's get to gardening and growing your own food. So how much space are you using on your 1 acre to grow food?
I started out pretty small this year. I am not super familiar with my dirt. So I wanted to start out small so I could figure out, because my dirt is mostly red clay, not easy to garden in. And I needed to figure out what's a good mix for that. So I have one raised bed that is 2x8, and it's filled completely with store-bought dirt, and it has done terribly, absolutely terribly.
Interesting.
I have another patch that is 8x8 square, and it is primarily my red clay, and I opened about 5 bags of compost and manure and mixed it in by hand, and it just, it's like a jungle right now.
Yeah. You know, plants love, they love to be fed, right? That I think that one of our previous shows, if our audience is interested, is about, you know, getting the right soil. And part of it is the, you know, the manure and the compost that you put in it. The plants need to be fed. They can't just, a lot of the sort of store-bought bags of soil just don't have that in them. You know, they've been screened for all the weeds and all that kind of stuff. So they've been put through sort of a high heat, a pasteurization, I guess, of some kind. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of that, you know, good stuff is cooked off, like it's gone. So you have to be very aware of the soil that you're growing in. So it sounds like, Jody, that you're finding things out as you're starting this up. And isn't that what self-sufficiency is all about? It's kind of like there really isn't sort of a guidebook specifically.
There's not.
There should be.
However, Google, Pinterest, Facebook groups, Twitter, there's so many resources out there. And I started very small because I'm physically limited on how much I can do. I'm financially limited on how much I can fail. So what I did was I did my research. I went through all of these things, Twitter, Google, a zillion different blogs. My Facebook groups are priceless with regard to helping me have some information. And I started small so that I could try a couple of different things to see what worked best. And now next year, I have the knowledge that, number one, raised beds are going to be a waste of my time and money. So I'm just going to have to put the dirt in the ground, get it good and aerated, and do it that way. I've learned that watering from a sprinkler will keep the plants alive, but it's not going to give you any vegetables. So I'm going to be building rain barrels over the winter so that I can get to collect and have real water and hopefully more vegetables from that.
So you think that you think that the sort of the city water or the community water that you're getting, it doesn't have the right nutrients or minerals in it to feed the plants?
The water that we get is, and I don't know very many people who are left on actual well water that they're getting. The water that we get that's pumped in from whether it's a rural water place or a city water place, they treat that water and put so much into that water.
A lot of chlorine.
It's got bleach in it. No wonder the plants aren't growing, you know? It's fine for us and our bodies, but it's hard on plants. They're not getting the nutrients they need.
That's very true. It's true. I wonder how many people actually use rainwater and collect rainwater. So if you're out there in our audience and you actually collect rainwater, we might want to talk to you on the next show.
That would be a really good
idea.
Municipalities are changing the rules with regards to being able to collect rainwater. Some are encouraging it. Some are restricting it and taxing people, putting meters on rain collection devices. It's kind of crazy, but
yeah, that's silly. If you're joining us today, our show is sponsored by Little Crop Circles, littlecropcircles.com, where you can grow more in small spaces. And we have Joey Hewitt with us today, and she's from the Carolinas, and she's our Farmination gal, and she just started about a year ago on an acre of property of homesteading, and she's sharing her ideas on getting started with homesteading. Jody, what if you had something to share with our audience, what's the one thing that has helped you out the most in getting started with your homesteading?
I read a blog article by a gentleman, and I can't remember it now because that's just, my brain is a sieve. It's gone now. But it had a huge impact on me, and it said, you know, yeah, when you make that decision that that's what you want to do, that that's the lifestyle you want to live, you're excited, you're ready to start, and you want to go and do it, but don't. Watch your land, learn your land, learn your dirt, make a plan, get a piece of paper out, draw out your property.
So
it has made such a difference because, you know, when I first started, I wanted to plant a bunch of fruit trees, and where I wanted to plant them, if I had done that, we would have ended up having massive problems. Like the septic tank would have been in the way, the power line would have been
smart.
In the way, it wouldn't have gotten enough water, it just would have been bad all the way around. But because I took that man's advice, I have paper, grid paper. One is for the entire of the property, and the other is for my garden, because a square foot garden. And I know exactly where everything needs to go.
Yeah, you don't want to plug into a gas line or anything.
Exactly. And I want to get the most use out of my space. I only have an acre here, you know?
Right. Mm-hmm. That's smart.
If I had 127 acres, it might be different. I might just be, oh, well, let's just throw that over there willy-nilly. But I don't. I'm working in a limited space, and having that plan, even though some of the things may never happen, having a plan for where everything needs to go has made it so much easier with regards to actually executing the plan.
That's good.
So you could be a survivalist and be totally self-sufficient, off the grid, cut yourself off from hydro, never go to the grocery store, learn to live off the land. You know, that's kind of an extreme self-sufficient lifestyle, right, for most of us. Or you could go to the other side of the spectrum and be a homesteader right in the middle of the city on a deck off your condo, right? I mean, you can do it all.
Totally, you can do it. As long as your city ordinances don't prohibit you from doing it, you can totally do it. Somebody living in an apartment, yeah, they're not going to be able to raise pigs, okay? It's just a fact that they're not going to be able to do that. But you know what? They can come see somebody like me who can raise pigs. I'm planning on raising 3 wiener pigs. I only need one. Those other 2 have to go somewhere. There are local people that you can source things that you may not be able to do in your current situation. If you live in an apartment, fill your patio or your deck with vegetables and things. You can raise rabbits easily. You might not be able to have chickens, but you can have rabbits.
Yeah.
And then, you know, find your local farmers, your local co-op, get to know people, and there's no end to what you can do. You just might have to outsource some of it.
Homesteading is a growing segment of the world of people choosing to be self-sufficient, and we're chatting with Jody Hewitt, the Farminated gal. Her Twitter handle is @Farminated. She develops her self-sufficient lifestyle, and I want to thank you, Jody, and Lisa, thank you very much for keeping the show going, and it is time to say goodbye. The Gardening Network signs off.
Well, thank you, ladies, for having me.
You're welcome. Thank you.